How's everyone doing today? Good. Wasn't that a fantastic presentation on ball four? It goes downhill from there. We're going to have a good time, as always. We are unscripted. We just go with the flow. And we have a former Negro League player by the name of Jim Robinson here with us. As you can see in your conference booklet, he played with the Indianapolis Clowns, Kansas City Monarchs. Come on up here, Jim. Still walking and joking at 87 years old. Driving too. Yeah. You may have seen that great article about Jim Robinson in the Hall of Fame yearbook. I think it's called Memories? Memories and Dreams. And that writer is Danny Torres. So, as you know, we have a conference coming up, our 20th conference in Harrisburg on July the 27th, 28th, 29th, and our site coordinator is Ted Knorr. Where is Ted at? Here's Ted. So if you have any questions, get with Ted or myself or Leslie Heafy over here. I don't have enough handouts for everyone. We usually have a very small crowd, but this is New York. They don't do anything small in New York. I should have known better. In October of last year, I sent out a query to say, what areas of Negro League research do we need to do? And I got some really nice responses. And this is a printout from the December newsletter. And we're going to pass that out. Until we're done. Thank you, sir. There are a lot of blank spaces, some voids in Negro Baseball League history, and this is the group that can fill those voids. The Biographical Bio Project has done a lot of great work in writing biographies on former players, and they're excellent. They're not just run-of-the-mill biographies, and we thank Andy McCune for that, and Mark Armour, thank you. Mark was on the panel. So you can see from the list, there are a lot of Negro League biographies that need to be written, and some Negro League team histories, and because we have more information and we have access to the internet now that we didn't have 15 years ago, we can do some upgrades on some of the previous published histories. So, and I'm still working on the statistical project with my good friend Wayne Stivers out of Plano, Illinois, right outside of Chicago, and we are finishing that up. We're up through 1948, where we're going to have a cutoff. And we have roughly about 14,000 box scores into an access database. And we'll be able to print out everything that you see on baseballreference.com and seam heads. And we can tell you how many home runs Josh Gibson hits per at bat, how many strikeouts Satchel Paige had per game. We can do all the analytics that you want for the Negro Leagues. And this has been a long 20 years of journey to finish this project. We're at a small speed bump in the road. It's not small, but Wayne had a pacemaker put in a few months ago, so he's kind of on standby right now. But basically, all we have to do is check the material and upload it to the internet, so everyone in this room can have access to the latest and greatest Negro League statistics. And we can have them arguments next year about who was really the greatest, Babe Ruth or Josh Gibson or Turkey Stearns. Huh? Can somebody share a handout with? Yeah, we usually have 20 or 30 people, but it's all cool. Can everybody hear me back there? That's oxymoron. Can you hear me? But we got a great guest here today, Jim Robinson. And unless you have, well, are there any questions about the Negro League Conference in Harrisburg? As you know, we give out four $1,000 scholarships. We give out two $500 library grants, and we raise monies to put headstones on unmarked graves. We just think it's unacceptable for somebody to be buried in an unmarked grave. You know, some of the Negro League players, when they finished their careers, they didn't have much to do. They didn't have the money. There was no pension plan. And so many of them are buried in unmarked graves. And we have done probably 34 graves in the last 12 years. And we're expecting to do three or four by the end of this year. And it's all because of the support of the people we have in this room today. So give yourself an applause. So we have a good time, I tell you that. These are our four scholarship winners. And I brought even less copies of these. Jacquez Smith from Winterville, North Carolina. Najee Reeves from Savannah, Georgia. Isabella Barnard. She's from out of California. And Sophia Dassey. From Eugene, Oregon. So I'm gonna pass these out to show what we're trying to do. We love what we do because we benefit so many people. And if you haven't registered for the conference, I have some registration formats up here. That you can order general information about how to register, how to donate, the whole nine yards. So, and if you cannot register, we have a sponsorship page. Home run level, silver level, gold level, platinum level. It's only $5,000. That's pocket change for some of you. So, I can see. Jim, yep. Jim is, I won't say he's unique, but Jim has a degree, and many other Negro League ball players went on to get to higher education. Some of them became PhDs and what have you. And Jim is one of those rare ball players. Maybe not rare is not the right word, but had a great career, and he finished his education in North Carolina AT&T. Yeah. So, Jim, tell us a little bit about your career, how you got started. And you know, I got some favorite stories I want to hear again. You can sit down if you want to.
Okay. I think I'll sit right here.
Okay.
I think. You know, I was trying to figure out when Larry asked me to speak, what am I going to say about my career, and how come I'm speaking at the Sabre Conference? So I figured out the best way to deal with that was to go back and let you know how I got here. I'm going back to 1939, when my father used to take me to the Polo Grounds to watch the New York Giants, Carl Hubbell and Mel Ott. We used to sit in the bleachers, always in the bleachers. My father convinced me that the bleachers was the best seat in the house. Because when the game was over, the ball players had to come walk up the stairs to the clubhouse, and I got a chance to really take a good look at them as they came up those stairs. So I was proud that I was a bleacher. I was a bleacherite, but I got to see guys like Mel Ott, Carl Hubble, had a chance to look them right in the face. Soon after, my father had a friend who went to Negro League baseball games, and he told my father about it. He said, you ought to try it. So one Sunday, my father took me up to the Polo Grounds. We always walked from 112th Street to 157th Street. There were times that my father would ask me, did I want a treat? And I would say, yeah, how about a subway ride? It was a long walk. But my father, he would take me up to the ball games, and I was really impressed with the 40,000, 45,000 people on Sunday doubleheaders. Much bigger crowds than I saw at Polo Grounds when I saw the New York Giants. After the game, my father would walk back down 7th Avenue, and he had it timed so that we got to 142nd and 7th Avenue, the Woodside Hotel. That's where all the Negro League ball players used to camp in there when they came to New York, Woodside Hotel. And my father would walk up to ball players who were standing around in groups, and my father was very aggressive. He'd walk into the group and say, my son wants to shake your hand. And I would shake hands with maybe five or six guys. I didn't know who they were, and he didn't either. But that was my first real opportunity to shake a professional baseball player's hand. And then when I got back to my neighborhood, the next day, I would say, hey, I shook hands with Satchel Paige, Josh Gibson. Oh, the guys, they didn't believe me. I said, look, I'm telling you, if you don't believe me, ask my father. But I was so proud of the fact that I had a chance to really go to those games and also meet some of the ball players and shake hands with them. Nobody else in my neighborhood was doing that. So that was really a big deal. I guess around maybe age 14, there was a friend of mine, his name was Lionel Evelyn, turned out to be a pretty good pitcher. He convinced me to go out for a Sandlot baseball team. I went out for that team. We had a great time. I was just learning how to play, but we had a manager named Mr. Reese who was very patient, and he really made me feel comfortable. So that was my first organized baseball, and at 15 years of age, I went to Commerce High School. Now, I don't know, there may be some people who remember Commerce High School. Commerce High School was located on 66th Street. That's where Lou Gehrig went, and that is now where Lincoln Center stands. They had to demolish my high school in order to put Lincoln Center on. In fact, there's no indication anywhere in that neighborhood that Commerce High School once stood there. You know? And I always feel bad about that, because that was a great high school. One of the things that I remember about playing high school baseball was that we never could really get into it because it was cold. You know, we started playing in March and April, and it was rainy and cold. Sometimes we had to go all the way up to Van Cortlandt Park to play. And it just when the weather got warm, the season was over. But I really learned a lot about baseball. And when I became a senior, we finally had a fairly decent team. But we never won any championships, but I remember that we had a good team. Okay, so now I'm out of school. I'm looking for work. I'm taking one or two courses at City College. And I'm a member of the Harlem YMCA. Just my luck, 1948. Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella are working there during the off season. I never got a chance to really meet those guys in the beginning because they were coming there in the afternoon. My membership was in the evening. But I had a coach, basketball coach there, who began to make friends with Campanella. And he told me one day, you ought to go talk to Roy Campanella. Campanella had a liquor store only a couple of blocks away from there. He said, go around and talk to him. I went around to see Mr. Campanella, and he was a friendly guy. He asked me, what were my plans? You finish high school, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to City College. I take a course here and there. And I'm doing part-time work, and that's about it. Roy told me that if I was interested, he could get me a 4-year scholarship at North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, North Carolina. Boy, was I happy. Before you know it, I was on my way and got there in the spring semester, my first trip south. It was really the most exciting time in my life because I was playing baseball, I made the team, I was in school, and I was in a totally new environment. Luckily, I had friends that would help me as we walked downtown, and they helped me with where I could go and where I could not go, because this was 1948, 49, and the South was very much segregated. But I enjoyed my 4 years there, and my senior year, we finished playing baseball. We played baseball in a minor league park, which was maybe 2 blocks away from the campus. And as I was walking back to the campus, a gentleman tapped me on my shoulder and said, Jim Robinson. I said, yeah, I'm Oscar Charleston. I'm a manager of the Philadelphia Stars, and I'd like you to play shortstop for me when this semester is over. I said, I think I would like to do that, Mr. Charleston. Well, I was so excited, but a week later, I broke my arm. We were playing a night game, and a pitch was coming in high and tight, and I threw my arm up and broke it. My season was over. I got in touch with Mr. Charleston, and that was the end. Around Labor Day, the Philadelphia Stars came to New York to play in Yankee Stadium. By that time, I was ready to go, and I showed up at the ballpark, and Mr. Charleston gave me a shot, threw me out in left field. This was late in the game, and I was scared to death, hoping nobody would hit the ball to me. I never played outfield in my life. First guy up, hit a line drive over my head. And I went to the fence, I picked the ball up, threw it back in. And that was it. That was my relationship with the Philadelphia Stars. The next year, they had dropped out. But I had a friend, a friend who was very close to Mr. Bunny Downs, who was the business manager of the Indianapolis Clowns. He told me that the Clowns were looking for some infielders to go barnstorming. The season was just about over, but they wanted to play another 30 or 40 games. And they needed a guy, they needed a couple of infielders. So I said, I could do that. And I went on that tour. And on that tour, there was a man named Quincy Troop. Quincy Troop was a great catcher in the Negro League with the Chicago American Giants, but he was working for the St. Louis Cardinals. He signed me to a minor league contract. Hey, I was really excited. But then I got a letter from the government. They were asking me to please show up in order to serve the United States Army, and that was quite a bummer at that time. But when I came back out of the Army, I got back in time to go to spring training. I was in spring training with the AA team, the Allentown Cardinals. I was really excited. I thought I was doing well. And I said, well, you know, here I am. I'm going to make this team. As we were breaking camp, the managers came and said, Robinson, we know you could play here, but we've got to move some guys to a lower classification because the big club is sending guys down. They wanted me to go to a Class B ball club. And I was really upset about that. And I didn't like it. And I was 24 years old at that time. You know. I called Quincy Troop, and Quincy said, look, if you don't want to do that, I'll arrange for a tryout with the Kansas City Monarchs. And we worked that out, and I met the Monarchs. They were training in Jacksonville, Florida. And that was the beginning of the most important 3 years of my life, playing ball with the Kansas City Monarchs. It was fun. It was grueling. We had to work out a lot of stuff on the every day and just trying to make life pleasant for ourselves in terms of finding a place to eat, finding a place to sleep. The salvation was when we got to the ballpark, we were all happy because that's what we really wanted to do, play baseball, you know. But I remember there was something about playing with the Monarchs that helped me to really grow up. It helped me to deal with dissatisfaction, disappointment, but also it really helped me to make friends with guys from other areas. It helped me to understand a lot about the country that I lived in, the United States, especially the South and the Midwest, because we spent a lot of time in those areas. We had a manager, his name was Dizzy Dismuke. He was a great old-time pitcher. He sat in the front of the bus just like this. He never leaned back. He was he was amazing. But he was really a great baseball man, and he really helped to solve a lot of internal problems on that ball club. One of the biggest problems we had on that ball club was fighting with the pitchers about opening the windows on the bus. Of course, you know the bus was not air-conditioned, and we'd like to have some air sometime, but the pitchers would not give in. They always thought that the air would hurt their arm and it would catch cold, you know. Many of them seemed like they were already hurting by the way they were pitching. But Mr. Dismuth really straightened it out. Here's what he did. He put all the pitchers on the aisle seat. so they would be away from the windows. And then, of course, I had my way. I could sit near a window and get some air. That was really important. But little things like that, Mr. Disney made me captain of the team. And, you know, and I was really proud, but I didn't know what I was supposed to do as captain. Then I found somebody told me, said, look, make sure the guys get on the bus on time. When we get to the ballpark, make sure we understand what the schedule is, when do we hit, when do we have, things like that. So I became the captain, and I enjoyed it. It gave me a chance to take out the lineup to the umpires at the beginning of the season, at the beginning of the game. And it made me feel like I was important. What I remember about playing with the Kansas City Monarchs was that no matter where we went, we were well received. There was something about that name that was important to a lot of people. After 3 years with the Monarchs, I finally gave it up. It was time for me to get a real job. You know, I had my degree, and I took a job with the New York City Housing Authority. But it was as a former player that I began to realize how important the Negro League was. I was beginning to get phone calls from people asking me to make appearances. I found that we were having reunions. The museum had a reunion of ball players. More than 1 year, I think. We had 2 or 3 years. And I was meeting people who knew me. I was meeting writers. I was meeting people who were asking me for the autograph. All of a sudden, there was a new life for me as a former ball player. You know, I was going to make speaking engagements. I was going to card shows, stuff like that. It was so exciting. It was really unexpected, but I embraced it because it made me feel good. So here I am, a former player, but now it seems that as a former player, people know me, and I'm beginning to meet people who know a lot about Negro League baseball. I go to meetings like the Pop Lloyd Weekend they used to have in the Atlantic City every year. About 30 or 40 ball players would show up. It was really something that I'll never forget. And then all of a sudden, the Major League, the commissioner, came up with what they call a charitable program. I call it a pension. Because every month for the last 10 years, I've been getting a check from Major League Baseball. That check is bigger than any salary I ever got as a baseball player. But in addition to that, I've been fortunate enough to work and to be sent to the Major League All-Star Game every single year for the last 7 or 8 years to work at their Fan Fest. This time next week, I'll be in Miami. So I didn't make the Major League as a baseball player, but the Major Leagues has been very much a part of my life, and I'm really embracing it, and I love it. So
that is great, Jim. You can see why we have Jim at the Malloy Conference sometimes. He's one of our more articulate ball players. Great career, fantastic story. And he has a lot of stories that he's not sharing. But one in particular, why don't you tell us about the time that you interacted with Nat King Cole?
This might have been in 1957. We were the Monarchs were playing in Washington, D.C., and we were on our way to Baltimore. And while we were getting on the bus, we looked out the window, and this guy looked like Nat King Cole. I said, yeah, that is Nat King Cole, you know? And he was trying to get the attention of our manager, because apparently he needed to get to Baltimore, and his car had broken down, and he decided that he would ask our manager, could he ride with us so he could make his engagement? And of course, the manager said yes, and so Mr. Cole got on the bus. And we were really proud and happy to have such a celebrity on our bus. And he came and walked down the aisle and sat down next to me. And we talked, and it was really something that I'll never forget. On the way, Mr. Cole pulled out his cigarette. He had a long holder, you know, and he began to smoke. And the manager got a whiff of that. The manager's sitting up front, and he wants to know, who's smoking back there? And all the players looked around. Somebody said, it's Mr. Cole's. So Mr. Cole, he put his cigarette out. But that was probably the only time all season anybody smoked on that bus. You know? But I'll never forget it. And it's just one of the kind of common interest stories that we had during the course of my career with the Kansas City Monarchs.
Thank you, Jim. Appreciate it. We have any questions for Jim? Yes, Tom, I see your hand first.
Well, actually, I didn't spend enough time with Oscar Charleston. It was just that day that he asked me to play, and then a few months later, I showed up at Yankee Stadium because I knew they were playing there, and he was kind to me. You know, he told me he was sorry that I couldn't make play that season because of what happened to my arm. And he was saying that hopefully next year we can work it out, but there was no next year. So I really never had a chance to really know much about Oscar Charleston except that he was kind to me, soft-spoken, and I knew who he was, you know, because I read about him. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Jim, for sharing that with us. And God willing, we'll welcome you to Washington, D.C. for the All-Star Game in 2018 for the Fan Fest. When the Expos moved to Washington to RFK Stadium in 2005, 2006, I had the opportunity to meet a woman who pitched in the Negro Leagues for the Indianapolis Clowns, Maxine Mamie Peanuts Johnson. I was wondering whether you either played with her or other females or played against them and how good they were.
that year that I barnstormed with Indianapolis, Mamie was there. She was a right-handed pitcher. And I think that she did as best she could. she would only pitch one or two innings. And I got to give her credit for being courageous and strong-willed. And that's about all I can say about her. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Jim.
Did you play at all with Ernie Banks when he was with the Monarchs? And what are your thoughts about him if you did?
Ernie left the team before I got there. Ernie, he went from the Monarchs right to Chicago, you know. There were some of the guys on that on my team who played with Ernie, and they loved Ernie. I had a brief stint with the Memphis Red Sox. I forgot to even mention that. But during that time when I was with the Memphis Red Sox, we were playing the Kansas City Monarchs, and Ernie Banks was playing shortstop then. And that's the first time I really saw him play. Yeah. And the next thing you know, he was gone. Yeah. But, yeah.
Do you think that if the major leagues had not integrated, that your career would have continued even in the Negro Leagues as it was?
I really can't. I believed in integration, and so even though what it meant to the Negro Leagues, it finally had to fold its tents. But I thought that it was important for the best players in the world to get to the major league. So, and that's the way it worked out. That's the way. But I know that it was important at the time that the Negro League put their league together, that was probably one of the first, as far as I'm concerned, civil rights movements in this country. It was historical. And I think it was a very important thing. And it's something that we should all, when we talk about American history, that has to be a very important part of it.
Thank you. Jim, I've known you a long time, and I've heard so much, and we know each other so well. Never asked you this question. Do you remember hearing that Jackie Robinson signed with the Dodgers? And when you did hear about it, how'd you feel?
When that happened, I was probably the most excited person in the world, because I said to myself, I'm going to be a major leaguer. And I used to tell all the guys in the neighborhood, watch out. But, the one guy who never really encouraged me much about playing baseball was my father. My father, he always thought that when you get out of high school, you get a job. and you can fool around with that baseball if you want, but, the most important thing is that you get a job. But I remember in my neighborhood when Jackie Robinson signed, that was really a big deal. And people began to think in terms of the possibility of getting to the major league.
All right, thank you, Jim. I'm gonna leave a little time for y'all to come up and maybe get some autographs. But on behalf of the Jerry Malloy Negro League Conference, we'd like to present you with a Jackie Robinson 42 hat for coming here today. Thank you very much.